Hi, everybody. My name is Josh Nason. This is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. Big show today. One I have wanted to do for quite some time, but never asked my guest. And my guest this week is the reason this very podcast exists, and that being Luke Thomas, longtime MMA media member, writer, TV host, radio host again, and now he's doing his thing on, has been actually quite some time on YouTube and other outlets, of course, with Morning Combat, his Luke Thomas live chat he does every week, and a myriad of other stuff. And this is one, again, I'd wanted to do for quite some time. We talk about the changes to Morning Combat, which is the award-winning Morning Combat, I should say. So talk about the changes to that show that's undergone the past few weeks in the new direction. We talk about the live chat, some MMA media stuff, and all types of other things as well. Hour-long conversation with Luke Thomas, and that's coming up right now on Josh Nason's Punch-Out. Enjoy. And join me after the interview. I have a few other thoughts about the interview and all kinds of other stuff as well. So my guest this week is someone familiar to MMA fans and perhaps you wrestling fans as well, a Marine Corps veteran. He has been in the combat sports space since 2008 as a force behind the glory days of Bloody Elbow, former radio host of both SiriusXM with the Luke Thomas Show and MMA Nation on Washington, D.C.'s 106.7 The Fan. He was a co-host on MMA Uncensored Live from the Spike TV days, a former senior editor of MMA Fighting and SB Nation, now the longtime host of several iterations of his weekly live chat on YouTube, in addition to the award-winning Morning Combat, a twice-weekly show also available on YouTube, and the recently launched Luke Thomas Gets Political, also on YouTube. Oh, he has a Substack. He has also done commentary for MMA, boxing, and kickboxing, and about 12 other things I didn't include. He's done all that, folks, but he's never done this show, and that changes now. So with that, I welcome Luke Thomas. Luke, I've been waiting for this day a long time. We're here. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. Jesus, I hadn't really considered all the things I've done in the course of almost 20 years. It's quite a lot, actually. But thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, this is it's a story of perseverance as I was kind of going through writing, typing up some questions and stuff I want to talk to you about, because you've done all those things. I think that's one of the things that I appreciate about you, and I think a lot of other people do, is you have perspective based on all these different areas of media that you've been in, from TV to print to traditional radio, terrestrial radio, all that. You've done all these different things, and of course now, you know, focusing on YouTube. Your career really is a story of perseverance in so many ways, at least from my perspective.
Well, thanks. I don't know how you can have one in media without a little perseverance, to be honest with you. I think it requires, I mean, you know, because the game has changed, right? So now you can bypass the traditional gatekeepers to develop an audience. But the era I grew up in, for the most part, required us to convince editors, program directors, producers of people who were gatekeepers to these media institutions to give you a go. And, you know, if you wanted any kind of, in my view, if you wanted any kind of genuine advancement, you had to just kind of, especially in the early days of MMA where things were still popping up all the time, but, you know, in a very uneven way, you had to knock on a bunch of doors, man. So,
yeah.
Well, I did, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, we've really kind of grown up through, you mentioned this before, alluded to it. We've really kind of grown up through with the UFC and the sport. So I started writing about MMA in 2005 with the Ultimate Fighter. That was kind of my intro. I saw a little bit of stuff before. It didn't really connect with me. And then 2005, that's really what it caught. And then it was, you know, Fight Magazine, and I also wrote for Bloody Elbow for a little bit, and Bleacher Report, and all these different types of things. And you do a podcast, and you do some radio appearances. But we'll talk about this a little bit later. You know, you've talked about, you know, state of MMA and media before, but just how quickly things have changed. You know, and in your career, very similar. You've gone through and grown up with the sport, and as you mentioned, we're washed old men now, right? We talk about that a lot. We talk about BC and Chuck and all that. It's crazy. 20 years just seems to, you know, fly by just like that, but it's been quite a ride.
It's been fun in the sense, I mean, I don't really know what the future holds. I'm sure it's something we'll probably talk about here a little bit, but the period that we came up was fun in one particular sense, which was MMA at that time was much more of a sort of a little engine that could story about how big the sport could be and what kind of parts of the public it could reach. And there was a time when there was a sort of growing phenomenon that some media outlets and media genres got to it faster, but it was just kind of like this sort of slow accumulation where now they're talking about it on the radio, and now the newspapers are hiring somebody to cover it, and there's TV shows for it. And this was kind of all happening, in fairly successive order. The only thing that I think now I kind of lament about all of that is a lot of that has gone away. It was kind of funny, like at that time when those jobs were being created. Maybe and in retrospect, I think somewhat naive, obviously, but at the time you're like, wow, man, MMA is really blowing up. The presumption was it had not reached its peak, which was true. I'm speaking, so let's say circa UFC 100, right? So 2009-ish. You can even go before 2007, 2000, any kind of post Ultimate Fighter moment. But before we really get to the Fox deal, you're sort of thinking to yourself, wow, this thing can go on much bigger than this. And so these media outlets are always going to need people for this. These are just, this is just going to be a new kind of job that the media hires for. And it has rapidly contracted in the last 3 years. So I was glad that I got to do a lot of those jobs, but I am sad that many of them no longer literally even exist.
Yeah, we'll get to more of that in a little bit. I want to talk about more in combat, lead off of that. I do need to tell you the story. So I never talk to my wife about the podcast at all. And other than if it's family time, I have to be away for this or doing whatever. And so the other night, last week, I said, oh, I booked a big guest and Luke Thomas. And so she's not an MMA fan at all, but she knows your name from like, I'll be watching stuff on YouTube or listening. She's like, who's that? She's kind of interested in whatever. So I told her that last week. And so I swear to God, she looks at me, she pauses and says, how'd you do that? I was like, oh, thanks. Okay. And then last night she's like, are you nervous? And I'm like, no. And I remind her, look, I've talked to Sean Wheelock before. I think I'm going to be just fine talking to Luke the next day. So yeah, it's funny how spouses and so on get to kind of know who you listen to for shows and things like that, but they don't really know anything about the person,
Well, I will tell you, I don't have that relationship with my spouse. I keep my listening habits. There's nothing wrong with them, but I just they're mine. You know what I mean? Like I don't share them, so to speak.
Same here, same here. Well, speaking of listening habits, let's start with Morning Combat. So a show that launched in 2019. Yourself and Brian Campbell, a past guest on this show. And so when I reached out to you initially, it was a little fortuitous because the news had not come out that Brian was leaving the show and taking on CBS and Paramount and so on. And that a new era was set to begin, which happened, of course, this past Monday as we're recording this. And in a career, as we talked about, that's been a lot about change, yet another one for Morning Combat, and a show that's got a lot of change on its own through the years.
Man, I could say so much about this. The truth is, and I'll this is very true. Now, this wasn't quite true in so the show has had many iterations. The initial one was it was strictly a one time a week Showtime product for Showtime Sports. Again, as you mentioned, it launched circa July of 2019. I had done 1 year of the MMA beat in Ariel's absence. I did not enjoy doing it. There's a lot of reasons for that, but in any event, Showtime comes around and they wanted something. They wanted some programming that they could both promote their boxing as well as their MMA, and so we got a one time a week deal, and then Showtime and CBS were in the same sort of family at the time, Viacom slash Paramount, and they eventually made a deal where like let's just make this a big thing, like a flagship program for the brand, and they did, and those were some of the best days of the I think MK's life. And then of course this is pre Skydance merger. Paramount gets out of the whole business. They really spell they completely sell off Bellator, they close Showtime Sports, like it was, they got rid of everything. I realize that it might sound weird because they got the Paramount deal. I know you know the difference, but for the audience, they got the Paramount deal with the new Skydance merger, and that completely changed their priorities. But let me assure you, they were done with combat sports at the end of 2023, and so we ended up doing All the Smoke, which is all the people from Showtime Sports developed a new company called All the Smoke, and I work there. The thing I want to bring this all up to say is, I recall when we did the deal with CBS, I'll never forget this. I was like, I just want to build something that lasts. I always envied, not that I ever had a desire to be on TV in this particular way, but I always envied shows like Jeopardy that just had this life where it could go on, or more specifically to sports, PTI is still on the air. And my hope was, I don't know if we can be the combat sports PTI, but to have something like that. But the reality is the present media space, just unless you have an enormous hit that can scale, it's just not really possible. I just don't think anything like that can last. So the fact that it has lasted through these iterations as long as it has, to me, is something I'm very proud of, and maybe a minor miracle.
And for those that have not watched a show or fell off, came back in, that kind of happens with MMA and so on, that you switch studios several times. I think you're on your maybe fourth or fifth, give or take. You had the bomb
Pop
shelter.
something like that,
Yeah,
yep.
it's crazy. It's crazy. And you mentioned change century parent companies several times as too, yet the show keeps persevering. And a lot of that is, I mean, every podcast says it's the fans. It is this loyal fan base that you built, and we'll talk about some of that with the documentary review that you recently did. But it is a fan base that in it was easy to get very cynical about the way that people take in MMA media now, because there's so much smoke, and people just look at it like they're looking for like big opinions and stuff that doesn't mean anything. They don't look for substance, yet MK has always provided substance, at least to me. And there's a fan base that still desires that, wants that, and is willing to follow the show no matter what. And I think that means something. As you mentioned, you're trying to create a franchise or just something that has lasting power. I think it has. I mean, we're 2019 to 2026 now. I don't know. It has that feeling of, it feels different. There's substance to it, and it's not, and it's fun, but it's also serious. And it's just a really, really, really good MMA show and slash boxing, as for some time. And that means something. So, and that's a good feeling as a fan of the show.
I have been very lucky about something, well, many things, but one thing I've been very lucky about is, in corporate media, when they mostly just tell you what to do. Now, they don't come every single day and tell you what to say, but they definitely have a clear understanding of what you're not allowed to say, what kind of things you can't touch. And of course, some of that makes sense. Like, hey, don't bash the advertisers, right? Okay, fair enough. Everyone can kind of agree to that. But, it can certainly go much more than that. But I have been let loose in ways that the vast majority of my peers have not even come close to that. And part of it is because I pushed the issue. Part of it is just the timing. Part of it is the way I got hired in places and the places that I got hired. I got lucky. I'm just trying to point out part of the reason MK has the fans that it does is because Brian and I were allowed to do what we wanted. We were just allowed to try, and some experiments failed, but many succeeded. We were allowed to give honest opinions when we thought something sucked, including within the combat sports family inside of Paramount. We were allowed to say it. Certainly, I said it. We were just kind of they Showtime came to us and was like, we just in a real way, like there's no BS about this. Like, we want you guys to just do what you want to do, and I think that people crave that kind of thing. They want people to just be good, be bad, look smart, look stupid, but just look human. And I think there's so much either guarded nature of what's on camera, or people going the other way and just getting, completely insane. That like just living authentically through all of its faults and its ups and its downs, that's different than living outrageously. And I think partly people respond to that. I would also say too, we got lucky with Brian Campbell. I got lucky in the sense that I did not intend to bring the kinds of things that he brought to MK when we initially planned it out, but it just kind of, because he was allowed to be himself, it kind of ended up going that direction. And it sort of gave you, as you indicated, there's a frivolity that certainly is a big part of what we had done. But then there were parts where, we were able to dig into issues that a lot of other outlets couldn't or just simply don't. And that, I think those circumstances, as you indicated, quite fortuitously, helped us to stand out a little bit.
Yeah, and to your point earlier, people can sniff out fakes now, right? Especially corporate fakes. And people, topic we'll talk about a little bit later. Some people seem to really want that. They want media to kiss the ass of whoever they're covering, the organization, all that. It's an era in any sport where people root for corporations more than any point I've ever seen in my life. Which is, it's fucking crazy. I fundamentally don't understand it, but people can sniff out fakes, and that's the thing, is you both of you are not like that. You can tell, and there you can tell when someone is an opinion they don't believe. It's a traditional sports talk radio type take, where it's just like, this person can't possibly believe this, but they're like, I've heard some other sports talk hosts before. They're like, I have X amount of hours to fill per week. I got to do something. Because if I talk about how good the team is, no one's going to listen. I'm out of a job, right? That's one of the things that I think has been so so impressive. And I think is going to continue with Chuck is that you're unafraid. And in today's media, there's so many people that are running scared. They want to be friends with who they cover. They want to be friends with fighters. It's access journalism, all these type of things. You're not worried about that. You have a career. You've made it. And all this, you have a following. So you don't have to beg for that. You can be who you are. And that shows that that resonates with an audience.
Also, I would just say this too, like, you know, MK did some interviews, especially in the early CBS days, but less so over time. And I think fighter interviews are actually declining as a thing generally. But like, to your point, I, you know, oh, what happens if you lose your credentials? Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. It means nothing to me. There's not enough corporate jobs for that to even matter anymore. And I make more than I did in my corporate jobs on my own, and I don't ever go to a show. I mean, I might go to a show. I mean, I'm sure I will go to shows in the future or whatever, but like, you know, as I don't, if I never went to another one, it wouldn't matter even a little bit. So I don't care.
Yeah.
And more to the point, like these outlets who are going for like credentials, like the way they're basically just ushering in their own demise, because trying to tiptoe around things that, you know, the UFC or whoever it might be, any kind of been a powerful player in the space that they don't want to discuss, all that does is leave it open for agitators to discuss it, and not even just agitators, just whoever wants to get in on it. And then they're picking up the stuff you're leaving there, and that is what confers authenticity to the audience. They're just setting up their own demise. But the, you know, the sort of the other component in addition to that is we've empowered our audience to have a say. Now, not like ultimately they override us or something like that. But if you cultivate an audience that is engaged, they become a part of the story themselves. They give you really good feedback for the most part. They are interesting to listen to, whether or not they're right or they're wrong. Like they're it's the sort of like greater part, and all of that also confers authenticity as well when they know they can be heard. And again, not listened to about everything, but they know that they're heard, that their voice exists. All of these things confer legitimacy, and all of these things you don't need powerful actors to give you approval to do. In some cases for corporate media that might be the case, but as a sort of a general proposition in today's media, you don't need anyone's permission to do that. You just have to have a little bit of courage to have this kind of openness and this kind of forthrightness. And I think you know, the problem that we have now is people will do the outrageous bit where, like, mm-hmm. you could say people spot fakes. The problem that I recognize is that they don't, I'm not saying people don't care, but it's not enough of a limiting factor. In other words, I can go and just say racist, stupid shit, and there are confused young people on the internet who will view the willingness to break some kind of taboo as some kind of sign of strength, when in fact it's just parading, you know, being a fucking idiot. Like, you're just parading how stupid you are. And that kind of counts as its own form of authenticity in our current media environment, which I do think is a problem. However, there is a middle ground to occupy, and that's kind of a space that I try to look at.
Yeah, so let's talk about Chuck Mendenhall, another past guest of this show. Someone that's, he is, talk about OGs. He's a guy that's been around, been there, done that, battle-tested, both from the written word, of course, and the spoken word as well. You know, he's plugged away in this space for quite some time. And you've known him for a long time as well. I assume that helped in the decisions you were trying to figure out, how do we navigate this next era of morning combat. Let's talk about the decision to bring him in and kind of how things are going to go going forward. We saw the first shot of it on Monday. I thought it was it felt natural. You know, it didn't feel forced. It felt like two people have known each other for a long time, but trying to figure out this new format and so on, but it didn't feel abrasive. It felt like the natural next progression. I think the fact that Chuck has been doing this for so long and has his own fan base and his own kind of his own way about him, I think it's going to be a pretty good fit.
I appreciate that. I certainly hope. And I said this on the show and I'll repeat it here, which is, listen, we are in a very different stage of MK than I ever thought we would be. You know, if you go back to February 2023, when Brian and I were on stage in London in the sold out arena, we were headlining a podcast festival. Like, I was like, you know, if you had told me in 3 years it will look completely different, I would just, you know, it would have been hard to understand. But of course, this is where we are. And in some ways good, some ways bad. But What I would say is, to your point, I've known Chuck. I mean, so MMAfighting.com originally was a property of AOL, America Online. I
Oh,
think they
yeah.
still exist in some capacity,
Yeah.
but they're not the media powerhouse that they once were. They were, of course, a telecom company even prior to that. And so then SB Nation at the time, Vox Media, bought them, I want to say circa 2011, something like that. Even before that, I had met up with Chuck at various shows, and we had kind of hit it off. Chuck is, has a claim to being MMA's best writer ever. Certainly, Ben Folks is in that conversation as well. But like whoever you want to end up picking, like he's in it, without any kind of question. And he brought this up to me. I had called him, when we were still figuring out, like once it was official Brian was going to go leave the show, we were all trying to figure it out. And one of the names that came up pretty quickly was Chuck. He'd been on the show before, as you indicated. And I called him up and we were hashing it out. And one thing he reminded me of was he's like, dude, we've been doing shows together since 2012. I mean,
Yeah.
almost 13 years I've kind of been doing on-air programming
Crazy.
with this guy.
Yeah.
And so we were like, you know what? Again, there is no replacing Brian Campbell. That's not a thing that exists. But can we just play to our strengths? Can we keep, through formatting, can we keep the spirit of the show alive and then play to our strengths that Chuck and I have together? And I thought, you know what? It seems like a good enough plan to me.
Yeah, he does need to catch up on MK lore. You're right, because some of the things,
Yes.
Cake Lady and some of the other bits. So I'm thinking that maybe you have this annual, the Doc of the Year, the MK essentially the Fan of the Year. This should be part of their responsibilities to educate Chuck, bring him up to speed, and I mean they got to start earning their living. You know what I mean? Help Chuck kind of
Oh, actually,
understand
I
all these
like that
things.
idea. I might bring that up and be like, let's have like an on-air class on MK lore for Chuck. It's a good idea, actually.
Absolutely, absolutely. Final question about MK. So I watched both of the Morning Combat documentary director's cut shows that you and Brian did that aired over the holidays. It man, it was a time. I know it was a time capsule for you, but like it was such a time capsule for fans that all the stuff that happened just a couple of years ago, but it feels like it happened 20 years ago. The way that time flies. And on the show, some of these things you had mentioned, like you'd never seen them before, or seemed very light. You were not a fan of that documentary process in the onset, but you talked and you got introspective about how you didn't realize how great things were in the moment until you're watching some of these things back. I think kind of that nadir, that apex was the Paul Mayweather fight in Florida, right? I think you
Right
might.
around that, yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned that, and you just the Showtime credit cards were working great, and all that. Is that a lesson that you're going to take with you, or is that just kind of a thing you kind of noticed in that moment, and you move on from it?
I mean, I'll be honest, I have seen basically every job that I have been very lucky. I've had a national radio show, I've had a national television show, and I've done everything kind of in between. There's very little within the combat sports space itself that I haven't done. I've been very, very lucky to have done that. Again, I think part of it was just timing, not necessarily pure skill in any kind of way. And so I just know what the best jobs look like. I've seen them. I work and Ariel Helwani has obviously done really well, probably done better than anybody else. I've seen some of his jobs up close too. Like I know what that stuff looks like. The Showtime job is the best job I've ever had. I mean, just by a million miles. And what I had kind of lamented, and this is true, like it's so funny. Like I remember it was the Anderson Silva fight. The Anderson Silva fight. We had met up with some colleagues of ours, Brian and I. Some MMA media colleagues, and they were just sort of lamenting how terrible their jobs were. And Brian and I looked at each other. I was like, dude, we don't feel this way at all. You
Yeah.
know what I mean? That's not a thing that we in any way understand in our present moment. But of course, it didn't last. I mean, I've definitely spent the death of Showtime fundamentally altered my career, and I didn't understand what to do about it for a very long time because it wasn't exactly clear to me. I would say that more recently, I actually have felt like I've got a little bit of clarity about what a path ahead looks like, and for the first time in a long time, I'm actually pretty excited about it. Now, of course, I'm still very excited about MK being a mainstay, but you're asking about the changes to it. The reality is, I have thought long and hard about this. I cannot. MK didn't change because in any way it failed at CBS or Showtime, and in fact, it exceeded. Like they set out these metrics for us, and we blew right past them. I mean, it would like this is not even a question. It's a question of like the larger company priority, and I can't do anything about that. I can't do anything about the executives at Paramount pre-Skydance merger just deciding we don't want to be in the combat sports space anymore. And yes, we've got some successful properties, but you know, when you look at what really matters to CBS, like March Madness or the NFL, and I'm sure UFC will matter to them now, given that they're the rights holder, but at the time they had Bellator, it didn't really matter. I can't do anything about that. I can't stop that kind of a thing. And so, you know, watching those documentaries and seeing that we used to do, you know, pay-per-view weigh-ins, and we're sitting next to celebrity guests like Micah Parsons, and we're at the Versace mansion, like that was all great. But the way I look at it now is almost no one in combat sports gets an opportunity to do stuff like that. I got a bunch of them. I worked hard. I never slacked. You know, I'm comfortable that now I did everything I could. I think the larger issue for me, and I'm being quite serious, is the decline in corporate opportunities for media jobs in combat sports. And more to the point, if I'm being honest, and this is something I'm not super sure about, and you might have your own opinions, and I want to be clear, I don't really know what the right answer is. I'm a little concerned about the future of combat sports broadly, especially in this country. And I have a feeling that they might be contracting in ways that we never imagined 10 years ago. And that is not also a thing that I can control. So
yeah,
I actually feel okay for the first time in a long time about everything.
Good. We're going to get to that point in just a minute, because your openness, something that, you know, I've noticed a lot, I've talked about in this podcast, something I first started noticing in the summer of 2014. Let's go back then. The live chat, which was a big part of it. You started at MMA Fighting. At one point, I think it was just named Live Chat at one point. Then it was named Promotional Malpractice, of course. And it's been an institution ever since. When did this idea first come up to do that?
Yeah, so I had just started at MMAfighting.com, and I had written some articles for them at the time, and it was fine. Well, that was going great, and I had noticed that other places were doing live chats on their show. I think maybe Junkie had one at the time or whatever. And I was like, oh my God, I would love to do something like that where I can just not spar with the audience, but go back and forth with them, you know, in some kind of coordinated way. And nobody had a really good answer for it at the time. Nobody had good technological tools to make this a worthwhile experience. And yeah, you could do things like that on a message board, but you know, at the time, I suspect it's still true to this day, the message boards are very hit or miss, right? I mean, you can get some good ones, but it's just filled with, you know, it's like trying to go through traffic, you know, on the street. Like you're at the mercy of who's there, you know? Mm-hmm. And they had this tool, I forget at the time, it was originally a text-based thing. And then they roll out Google Hangouts. And I realized that like, oh, I can read that stuff and just do that. And MMA Fighting at the time had an attitude towards me where I was not part of the original AOL crew. I was already at SB Nation, so they didn't really know what to do with me. So I was kind of just like volunteering for stuff that I thought I could do that no one was touching at the time. And the other part too was, remember, like all the institutional energy was put towards the MMA Hour, which I understood it was there first. Right, it was a big show, but like it was all hands on deck. So you could do video stuff, but it had to be a little bit DIY because you weren't going to get any help. That was my experience. And Google Hangout was pretty helpful. It was like, I just, you know, turn it on and you kind of go. And it's no, it was no frills. It was no frills, but it wasn't hard to use. And so I just, honestly, I never expected it to be anything. And I don't think it's ever going to be a super amazing thing in terms of, you know, gigantic traffic. However, as it's just a thing I love to do, it has endured for that reason.
Yeah. And that show is the reason this podcast exists. So I was, I was sitting at a desk in a job I hated. I spent that summer 2014, and I was scrolling through Twitter, and I'm like, I need something to get through the next hour. You know, I was so bored. And so I saw you said, oh, the live chat's coming up in 10 minutes or 20 minutes, whatever it was. And at that point, one of the things you've brought up before is that your first impressions with people are not sometimes the best. It takes a while to get through. I was in that camp. I was just, not that I didn't like you, but I was just like, I hadn't fully embraced it. And I'm like, I'm just going to listen to this. I listened to one episode. Then I'm like, I really like this. Then it was the next week, the next week, the next week, to the point that I would go on vacation. If I would miss a show, I would come back. Even though it was old news, I would listen to that show and then catch up. I thought it was just great. And part of that, you know, was the, again, you're open about a ton of personal stuff. It is not just, you're talking about kind of that, you know, the relationship with the audience. You're open about your family history. circumstance about your mom's passing, your various work situations, your struggles with those situations, life in Washington, D.C., why it's so important to you, your extended Colombian family, your daughter growing up, being loud as you're coming home from wherever. You're like, okay, here she comes, and here's Godzilla coming down the stairs. Right? You joke about those things. And from the outside, it felt like it was a conversation. Everyone says conversations, right? It was a conversation with the audience, and it also feels, I don't know if you agree with this, it felt like a form of therapy, perhaps, for you in a lot of ways, because you were airing things out and you had a receptive audience, and there wasn't that pushback of people didn't like, because you kept doing it and you kept doing it, and people were getting more and more engaged. You would reflect back on, you'd do a chat and be like, oh, here's what happened last week, or go and someone ask you about this. And it was kind of a thing about this the other day, that it was it's such a unique and personal thing. I just was curious if you felt like is an inadvertent form of therapy for you to talk about some of these things with the audience, in addition to, you know, MMA and all that.
Honestly, no.
Okay.
No, it is not. That's not, and I want to be clear, like I told you, I love to do it in part because, you know, it's fun debate over, oh, is Islam number one, or is Taporia number one? There's a fun element there. But partly, you know, you ever heard this expression? I'm not sure who said it first or whatever, but sometimes people have said, when you write something, like it's you feel, let's say you feel a certain way about something, like, oh, this traffic light that the city installed at this intersection, they really made a big mistake. And maybe you understand the reasons for it in some ways. But as you write, you begin to think about other things that, oh, you know what, this is another reason why I don't like it. And this here's evidence for this. It's almost like your way of kind of taking the sort of like really underdeveloped ideas in your head and then trying to make them a coherent whole. To me, it feels a little bit more like that than it does like therapy. Now, to be clear, sharing, again, I don't show everything about my life. In fact, there's much of it I keep quite, you know, not secret per se, but, you know, not on camera.
Sure.
But there's parts that just bleed through, right? As you mentioned, like my daughter comes home from school and it's, you know, it's quite loud. And it's in the middle of the live chat. And if I don't lock the door, she'll barge right on in. I think if you live on camera, you can live on camera in a guarded way, which is what I try to do, but that's very different than living on camera secretively. And I don't do that. I don't live secretively. I live where I try to keep, you know, some things that are not really in the public interest, or I just don't have a public need to share, private. But I kind of just live the rest of my life in a relatively, such as you can with this kind of thing, normal way. And I think that's what you might be picking up on, and discussing those things and being honest with you. But I would also say this too, like, I'm not doing a bit when I discuss difficult things, like, oh, I have to do this for, you know, some kind of performative reason, or even some kind of internal psychological reason. I share those things because, as a broader view of the world, I say this all the time, if you can't, I don't understand what the purpose is of the truth if you're not allowed to say it. And I don't just mean in a censorious way. I mean how you understand the world, how you interface with it, and what your particular circumstances are. The audience needs to know some of this, and you need to be honest with yourself and the camera with some of this and tell it, you know, genuinely. Again, I don't have to share every detail about my family or every detail about my daughter, but I share the details that are true and real and meaningful. And part of that is just living, again, to the extent possible in these circumstances, living honestly. It's not exactly what you're kind of getting at, but this is sort of how I view the whole process.
Yeah. Through this run that you've had with both MK, through your whole career, how have you dealt with the parasocial relationship thing that listeners have, especially when you're talking about your personal details and all that? Has there been, let's say, inappropriate or weird situations, you know, like you kind of mentioned, like, essentially trying to keep arm's length while also being truthful. Have you dealt with situations that's made you kind of reconsider things you share or anything like that?
Yes, to an extent. I mean, I'll never put my daughter's picture on the internet again.
That will
never happen. So that's one. There are some losers out there who have made use of it. I mean, again, you can't control the internet, but you know, I'm not, it'll, that'll never go on there.
Yeah.
But you know, most of that is not really it's not really an issue in general. You know, I tend to tilt a certain kind of internet loser, but there's not too many of them. The more interesting one is actually when they're positive. And to be clear, these are anybody who's got someone who writes them a nice note or something like that. I mean, it is always easier to send criticism and hate into the world than it is positivity. And so if you have somebody who's sending you something like that, it's a very special thing, actually. And if people care about your work, this is a special thing. But I still to this day, I don't fully have a, it's still weird for me to get it. Yeah. You know, it's still weird for me to get someone writing me a nice email. It's still weird for me to get someone, you know, who has, oh, I've been there since the bloody elbow days. You know, we're talking like 07, you know, I mean, that's a long time. Yeah. You know, I don't understand that fully as a person, to be quite clear. However, I just try to be as, you just have to look around and understand it for what it is. It's an extraordinary stroke of luck in your life that someone can care about something that you've produced in any capacity whatsoever for that long. And so I take it as the blessing that it is.
You're always trying new things. Some things, including Luke Thomas's Pissed, a show that I enjoyed quite a bit. And you joked about how all these people say they loved it, but apparently didn't watch it so much at a time to keep it going. Monday Morning Analyst, you've done a lot of just these different studies and try to educate people and things like that in between all these other things you're doing. And then recently last year, Luke Thomas Gets Political. You've always talked about political scene and the national climate and so on during your run, especially on the live chat notes. Why was the time last year to officially kind of split that off and launch that?
You know, it's kind of funny. I got an email the other day from somebody who was a longtime viewer of my work. And he was a Trump supporter. And to be clear, he was actually quite friendly. It was not an angry email. It was not a hateful email by any stretch of the imagination. It was somebody kind of saying to me, hey, like, I don't really agree with the direction you're going. And I think that it might be a mistake. You know, the question that he had asked was, are you trying to get all the liberal MMA fans? And I'm like, there aren't any left, or very few anyway. That's not the play here. But I appreciate that he didn't lash out. He was making a point, but I suspect a few people might have a question like that. The answer is pretty simple. The UFC, I had always been willing to discuss issues that for example, if you're breaking down film and in the middle of breaking down film, you're like, oh, this guy, by the way, his mom was a revolutionary for, you know, some kind of country in a far off place, you know, long live the revolutionaries. You are injecting politics into that kind of conversation where it really just has nothing to do.
Yeah.
If you're talking about Kimuras or arm bars or something, but you know, to the extent that we're talking about something where, like, you know, I'll make something up. We don't have this in MMA, but you know, imagine there was sort of like a kneeling, like a Colin Kaepernick controversy, then it would be relevant to have these discussions. And to the extent that that kind of thing ever happened, I was happy to do it. But never more than that. But then basically the UFC turned itself into a vector for right-wing politics in this country. That is not in any way a debatable statement. I know there's people in deep denial about that, but these are people who are so politically aligned with this turn that they can't actually lay eyes on it. And more broadly, like, when Donald Trump was reelected on reelection night, he had, you know, family up there and, you know, close campaign advisors. And then there's Dana White. And of course, he had a long history before that. He had spoken at all the conventions and blah, blah, blah. Like, we all know the story. But, you know, on election night, and then he's up there speaking at the dais saying, you know, he's going to stick it to everybody and, you know, good for him. And I just thought to myself, we are in a completely different space. We are in a space where the president of the Ultimate Fighting Championship is not just close friends with the president of the United States. They are working together. They are working together, both Trump using the UFC to gain access to portions of the electorate in terms of young men that are hard to reach, to getting his image burnished following January 6th. That's a real thing, you know, using them politically. And then, of course, the UFC and TKO is using these guys, right, for many reasons, not least of which is they've got this Ali Act legislation that they want to get passed. And, you know, any, you name, avoid any kind of antitrust scrutiny, the whole nine yards. Like, this is a real thing now. That was a big one. And I'll just very quickly, the second part was then the unique heinousness of the second Trump administration, even relative to the first, in just how wildly law-breaking it is. Forget norm-breaking, law-breaking. Yeah. I just was like, I've got a platform. They're intertwined. I'm going to say something about it. So here we are.
Yeah. And so far, 62,000 subs. You had some great guests on so far. Kyle Kalinske, Kamau Bell, who I believe is a Washington, D.C. area resident. No.
He lives in, he's from the Bay Area, but visits D.C. all the time. No, he does a ton of stuff here, yeah.
Yeah, you've got good guests and so on. Do you see us as, I don't say you're out from MMA, but like, as you mentioned, kind of be concerned about combat sports. Are you seeing this as a potential off ramp if for some reason, you know, the MMA it dries up, but like essentially that you could transition to this and this being your full time thing? Or do you think that MMA will always be part of your DNA as long as it's around?
The way I've been asked this question before, and I would simply be lying to you if I told you I had I've got a clear sense of what the future looks like. Mm-hmm. Like I've tried to play that game and I just don't. What I can tell you is, I'm going to keep knocking on this door for the foreseeable future. That's part of it. And the other part too, is it in terms of the fairness to my MMA audience, like, I don't know how I could ever not be a fan of MMA. It's just interesting. That's not even a thing I even think about, you know. You can have issues with this promoter or that product or this event or, you know, whatever. Like, there's always things to not necessarily like, if that's for you. But like, dude, I'm a fight fan. I think I will always be a fight fan. I don't imagine that would ever change. How that impacts me professionally, one direction or the other, like maybe I do this for another year and I'm like, you know what, the politics stuff, I don't know. It's not really going anywhere. And sure. MMA is blooming under the new Paramount banner. Like that's a very plausible scenario. I'm just going to keep pushing. I like doing it. So I'm just gonna, dude, it's so stupid. Like, some of the worst decisions I've ever made have been like, oh, I'm gonna do this thing because I like doing it. I mean, that has backfired badly. however, some of the very best ones have also been like, I like this thing, I'm just gonna do it. I didn't know much about the Marine Corps. I just kind of liked the idea of joining it. So I did. I didn't know much about philosophy. I just liked the first couple of classes that I took. So I'm like, I'm just gonna get a degree in that. And the dividends that it paid later in life will have been absolutely enormous in ways my 18-year-old, 19-year-old self could have never predicted. Right. So I'm not making a claim, oh, just do what you want to do. What I am saying is some stuff might work, some stuff will. You kind of just got to kick the tires and see what happens.
Yeah. I want to flip to some MMA media talk before we get out of here. A few names. Mike Chiappetta, Jeremy Botter, Josh Gross, Jack Encarnacio, Fight Magazine, Sure Dog, Bloody Elbow, the late Jordan Breen, countless others. There's been so much contraction in all these voices, these people that colleagues and you've worked with and I've talked to and written for Fight and so on. It's crazy. I was having this talk with last year with an editor from our website, and he's not an MMA fan, but he's like, why is the UFC so big, but there's so much less mass media coverage? You know, all these different outlets dropping coverage or dropping podcasts or so on. And the sport is so interesting. It's never been financially bigger. From a coverage standpoint, it's so disheartening and feels soulless in so many different ways. And kind of stuff we were talking about earlier with just the extremism on this side. And it's I don't know, like it's crazy. All these names have just gone away and there's only a few kind of old soldiers still left behind. It's sad in a way, you know, it really is. I don't know how you feel about that.
I mean, there's simply no denial. Like, if I say this, there's going to be a younger MMA fans like, oh, this is just a boomer take. Fine, then treat it as such. But for anyone who is willing to listen, for example, you mentioned on LTGP, like my politics channel, like, you know, who I'd interviewed. I also interviewed recently Patrick Wyman. Patrick Wyman wrote Bloody Elbow and some other places, Deadspin. He has a PhD from the University of Southern California in history and has become a history sort of like teacher podcaster first. When I say teacher, I mean in the loose sense, not in actual schools. And he has a new podcast out, and he was talking about, like, it's about ordinary people, not great leaders of history. And the lens of the season is through the course of not just American slavery, but, you know, through human civilization, all the various forms of slavery. And I asked him why he picked it, and he was making this argument to me about, like, the way in which a person controls their own labor, which is directly tied to slavery, has still echoes into how we interact with corporate employers to this day. Like, he was trying to sort of say that, yes, slavery as a practice is gone, but, you know, the echoes of it we still live with. And I was thinking to myself, like, this guy used to be in MMA media. Jordan Breen used to be in MMA media. And there is simply no denying that the next generation that has come up, they came up in a different media environment with radically different incentives. But the common denominator is, while there are absolutely some amazing creators out there, and in certain ways, that part of it is better than it's ever been. The people who are really talented have been unleashed in ways that they didn't have a space. But in terms of the kinds of people who had, you know, knowledge about the world and practice in the industry, that practice has been destroyed.
Yeah,
I mean, the people who step up now, again, it's just cultivating an audience on the terms of stupidity and outrageousness, because these things are good for algorithmic surfing. That is a very different skill than the kind of thing we were talking about previously. And so, you know, you mentioned, like, all those people are gone. And again, Jordan Breen sadly passed away. It's been this, that his death shook me. Because it wasn't just that he was gone, which by itself is tragic enough. It was that, and I talked to other people in the industry who knew him and had been around a long time. It just felt like the era of MMA that we all enjoyed together, that was the bookend of it. And there's still, it's not to say you can't enjoy MMA, that's not really the argument at all. But that particular period of it, where it was UFC and Strikeforce, and we were coming up, and it was doing big pay-per-views, and it was on Fox, and you saw it advertised on NFL games, which you're getting back to with the Paramount era. You know, all this kind of stuff was like, oh my God, this is fun and exciting, and the heavyweight Grand Prix. And like, Jordan, when he left, he took that era with him, as far as I'm concerned. The thing I go back to, you're asking about this, there is a lot of money, but it's just been concentrated in a singular way around one dominant entity, rather than being kind of spread out across the industry. And so, yes, you can get big dollars, you can get, you know, you can have big fights, you can do big things, but not in the kind of MMA used to be a place, and I'm not using this word in a political way, just to be clear, but MMA used to be a place that was actually quite diverse. It was, yes, it kind of maybe did have a political lean to the right in some kind of way, but what it really had was quirky subcultures, and all of that has been paved out.
Yeah.
And so there's just kind of like one way to be a fan basically anymore. And all of these factors have kind of made it a little bit less colorful to me.
Yeah. There was an organization that focused on lightweight fighters, the WEC, that was so fun to watch. And it just, Strikeforce. And yeah, you mentioned kind of the boomer reference. It's like, fuck those people, man. Like, it was a great era, right? It was great to have all these different things and different opinions and all that. But God, so many people, I was like, some of the blowback to the Jacksonville reporter that, you know, essentially gave a pep talk to Liam Cohen, the head coach, and this big reaction, just like, well, you know, essentially you have journalists kind of sticking up for the fact they learned this way of, like, you're not supposed to do that. And people are like, well, fuck that. Like, you should be able to do whatever you want. And no standards anymore. You know, people don't respect standards. It's just, you mentioned this paving over. It sucks. It sucks.
That whole thing really disappointed me when everyone's like, oh, that, you know, that lady was great. I mean, first of all, the lady does seem like a nice lady. And in fact, if you look at her record, she's done a lot of really good work in her career. I don't think it's really about, this is not a referendum on her in any kind of way. But what I would say is take that attitude and apply it in combat sports. And it's why combat sports media is broken.
Yeah.
Right. You take that attitude and you put it there, and it's people kissing up to Saudi dictators, or, you know, just, you know, heavy-handed promoters, or just malcontents that are somewhere. And it's like, well, you know, guys, I don't know what to tell you. Like, this lady does seem nice. It was a nice sentiment. I appreciate that. I really do. But that attitude, we've seen that kind of thing in our industry, and it is a cancer. I'm sorry to tell you.
It's spreading. It's spreading to all these other industries. Last topic before we get out of here. TKO. So you've experienced TKO with, obviously, The UFC ownership, myself through UFC ownership and also through WWE, which has been very interesting to watch. Now they're taking over boxing. How would you describe TKO if I was to ask you, which of course I am now?
I mean, voracious appetite for monopolistic control is their dominant thesis. Dominant, I should say, modus operandi. I'm not sure what else you want me to say. It is conceivable that in our lifetime, and not even just in our lifetime, in the next 5 years, it is at least conceivable, and you might even argue likely, but certainly conceivable, that you'll have one promoter for pro wrestling, MMA, and boxing. And not only is it just one in each industry, it's one for all three. It's the same one, essentially, across that. That is... I don't know how anybody who understands what a thriving economy looks like and can ever say with a straight face, that's a good thing for those relative industries.
Yeah, it's especially in the WWE side. I don't know if you feel this on the UFC side. I felt a little bit. I mentioned soul before, like promotions, and they have soul and they have history. And we've seen some of those things kind of evaporate away as time has gone on. I felt kind of less the UFC, especially I think post pandemic, less soul in that. WWE, I don't think the people that own it, as you mentioned, it's a voracious appetite for business and bottom lines and things like that. I don't particularly think they're good for like the pro wrestling industry. I don't think they care. I think they have people that do care, but ultimately they talk in terms of metrics and quarterly earnings and all these things, which are a public company, they're supposed to. But fans shouldn't care about that. But yet they're kind of getting sucked into that. And the UFC, I felt kind of the same way. And with boxing, I don't know. I'm not a huge boxing fan. I'm a fringe fan. But And I don't think people, to your point, they kind of appreciate what's coming or what's happening as they're seeing it play out before them. They're just happy to get what they get, and that's what they get. You know,
people want an IV drip. I mean, this is the interesting thing to me is I. You're seeing this everywhere, right? So what are you watching the sort of the techno-feudalists do with how we use their products? So let's take, for example, Spotify. I use YouTube Music, but, you know, you get the idea.
Yeah.
Where what they're trying to do is they don't really care what you listen to. They just want to keep you using it. The whole point is and YouTube obviously plays this game too. I mean, we should be clear about that. But it's like time on site, time on video. I mean, how many times you repeat a song, but how long the app stays open on your phone. And they just want to feed you content as long as you possibly can. And you're seeing this kind of thing everywhere, particularly where studios, for example, in Hollywood are less likely to play with new IP. They want to iterate existing IP, and part of the reason they want to do that is so they can just kind of not just stay within things that the audience knows, but then create a slate of content that will just keep you on Disney Plus because you're watching the latest sort of Star Wars thing, and it's just feeding it to you over and over and over and over again. And I was thinking about this. I remember when the UFC years ago, this was still during the era of Zuffa with the Fertittas, where they put out, it leaked, they had put out the shape of the, you might recall this, they put out the shape of the earth, and it was the shape of an octagon, but it was the earth, and it was world fucking domination. And that kind of seemed, you know, muscular and interesting at the time because UFC was still this little engine that could story. But the reality is what you're noticing among our tech overlords as they intersect with, again, Hollywood studios, music labels, now sports leagues too, what they want to do is just scale a product as much as possible to make sure that there's this constant morphine drip that they can give you all the time. And it may not be the best hit, but it won't be the worst hit. But the key feature is it's a steady hit. That's why the calendar has expanded to the degree that it does. The events, I mean, the events have kind of always been long, but now they're really long. They were not this long when they first started, even for the first several years. I mean, for the first like 15 years, they weren't this long. They only got long after the fact when they really expanded. Why there's more fighters in the UFC than there are players in the NBA. Like all of this is designed to just pull the product apart to make it as big as possible. And I always thought about this. I was like, what would we be if we had fight promoters in various places who were like, okay, I want to make a lot of money, you know, hundreds of millions, you know, so we're not talking small amounts, but what I really care about is not having the biggest product. What I care about is having a very, very big product, but that one I can just do quality control over. But that is not That is not how entertainment is being delivered to us in 2026. Not in sports, not in music, not in movies, not in TV shows. It's not how they're doing it. They're doing it the opposite way. And I think that malaise your feeling where you don't necessarily hate the product, but it didn't have the same, like you go to a museum where the curation is a really high level and it's a very engrossing experience. Well, imagine if they didn't curate. Imagine if they tried to fill exhibits with the maximum amount of stuff so your eyes can just constantly find something. This is not as rewarding an experience, but maybe it gets you to look longer. The incentive structure for how entertainment is crafted and delivered to us, I think, is broken.
Yeah, I agree. We've been very generous with your time. Before we get out of here, I have one other thing. It may make you laugh. And at the risk of embarrassing myself, I was going through some notes. I was like, because usually, you know, if I plan to interview people, I have notes and so on. And I looked at my Google Drive and I found something called MK Bingo. And at one point, I thought, man, it'd be great to create an MK Bingo card, cause I'm watching every week and all this. Would you like to hear some of the squares that I had for MK Bingo? Some of these I don't remember, but I'll throw them up.
So yes. This is as an observer what you hear. Okay.
All right. Luke, Latin American love reference. I assume this means for BB, for BBLs.
Or just, hey, here's how great Latin America is. Yeah, okay, yeah. That's one.
Luke uses an accent. I think some of your Southern accents are usually coming up.
Oh, yes,
like
okay,
that.
Fine.
Mm-hmm. A reference to Cannibal Corpse.
That's a great one.
Luke getting frustrated at BC.
Every day.
BC being inappropriate.
Every day.
Luke touches his glasses.
Oh, every 5 seconds.
Yeah. Technical issues.
We got better about those, but definitely that was a big part of them. Yeah.
That was one of my favorite parts. Probably one of your favorite parts, watching the live chats as you were learning how, and sometimes your microphone would just go and you would talk. Man. And then the reaction is you would look at the chat and then try to fix it. Yeah. It was, I had
a number of those.
BC says something inappropriate.
Yeah.
I put here Luke Rockhold story. There must have been a Luke Rockhold story that you guys told before over and over again. I don't remember what this was.
I don't remember what that is either.
A BC self-deprecating joke.
Okay.
Something about a Ryzen referee. I had Ryzen referee.
No, BC made that. Like, he didn't mean to be insensitive, but he did the karate chop joke. Yeah.
There you go. BC talks about his and Luke's relationship.
God, that annoyed me, but yes.
BC talks about the future of the show.
All the time, yes.
Luke gives direction, camera shots, ISO, something along those lines. Oh, yeah,
almost every show.
Yeah, and BC bring up the video. I don't know what that means, but that is it. BC bringing up the video. I don't know what that means, but...
I don't know what that is either.
Yeah, it was just random things I compiled at one point.
Those are great.
Yeah, those are good. Those are good. I have to create new ones for you and, of course, Chuck Mendenhall with Morning Combat. Before I let you go, obviously you have a lot of places you can follow you, watch you, feel you, experience you. Where would you like to send people to? Floor is yours.
You mentioned MK. That's always a place you can go, Mondays and Fridays. If you're talking about my personal stuff, if you want more just like sort of pure combat sports without any of the extra stuff... much of that will live on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Luke Thomas. If you want the more political stuff, it's LTGP, Luke Thomas Gets Political. And then what I would say is what the place that Substack occupies is kind of in between. But also places where I can explore new ideas, whereas YouTube is more restricted and that kind of thing. So whatever tickles your fancy, I appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, you've been a big inspiration to me and I think a great fixture in this industry. For a long time. And as we talked about, there's so many different, like how shitty things have gotten. I think, you've been a rock, a constant throughout this whole time and your iterations and congrats on surviving, right? I mean, it's not industry. We talked about so many people are like, I'm getting the fuck out of here. You know, they just, but you stuck around because it seems to mean something to you and it means something to your audience. And I hope that keeps going for a very long time. Luke Thomas, thanks so much.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Okay, big thanks to Luke Thomas for dropping by, and that was fun. I could have gone for another hour. If you've listened to this show before, you know, sometimes we go deep in conversations. He had about an hour. I used up, I think, 58 minutes of that. So it's just one of those things where afterwards, like, it's weird. So I record that Tuesday morning and recording this outro on Wednesday morning. And I woke up today randomly at 4 a.m, and I don't ever do this, but my head started kind of spinning with thoughts. And I'm just like, I'm thinking about the interview, really. I'm like, I was a lot of fun. I'm like, should I ask him about this? I really want to ask about this and so on and so forth. But it's hard. I don't, for the majority of these podcasts, I do not do like a full outline of questions. A lot is just, I may have a couple bullet points I want to hit, but it's just kind of off the cuff type stuff. That was not the case here. I had a list of questions and so on. And so you're kind of just kind of going through and like eliminating some things. And like, I don't know if we have time to get to this. I want to get to this, but some are things that I could have asked about the, if you're a real long-term Luke fan, ask about the squirrels in the attic that he talked about in his live chat before. I would have asked, delve a little bit more into the comment about combat sports, if he said not existing or existing in a much different way or so on. I wish I kind of delved into that a little bit more, but I was kind of looking at the clock. I'm like, I kind of really want to get some of this other stuff. And so many other things. As I was thinking, I was listening to another show he was doing today, and I was just like, oh, I could have asked about this, but those things happen. So you never know. Down the road, we may chat again about some other issues. But again, he is the reason this podcast exists, because I didn't even finish my thought as I was talking about on the show, is the reason that this show exists because of him is because I want to do something different, and that's what this podcast originally was set out to do. We did not have an MMA presence for a podcast on WrestlingObserver.com yet. Everyone talked about it, or everyone being Dave and Brian, the live coverage and so on. So that's why I started this. And over time, it just evolved. Really, after 3 years or so, give or take, it evolved into more of a pro wrestling thing. And after 2020, it really started to take more and more of a pivot, simply because I started kind of falling out of love with the sport. So we didn't even get to that, and kind of some of the reasons I think my MMA fandom has waned and so on. But, you know, those things happen in interviews and so on. But it was a great hour, and hopefully I get a chance to talk to him again sometime down the road. Please let me know on social that you listen to the show. That'd be a huge, huge thank you from me, and helps get maybe other guests as well. One point that we talked about, I just want to kind of expound on a little bit, was this the Jacksonville Jaguars media person and so on. So if you don't know the story, if you're kind of like, what did that mean? So over the weekend, the Tony Khan's, I'm obligated to say that, AEW, Tony Khan's Jacksonville Jaguars lost to the Buffalo Bills. Kind of a last-minute loss, last few minutes loss, tough loss. And afterward, Jags coach Liam Cohen was in his post-game presser. And he was asked by I think she might be a columnist, I don't know. And she wasn't really asked. The columnist elected to basically give him a pep talk. As a media member, gave him a pep talk about, you know, you have a lot, hold your head up high about, I don't have the exact quote in front of me. And of course, afterward, that spread around the internet, Twitter and so on quite quickly. And a lot of media people saying, shouldn't be doing this. And why are we doing this? And fans saying, yes, they should. And it is strange, because the reaction is Luke kind of put, I believe he said it was depressing or just disappointing or whatever he had said. I kind of share that same sentiment. And the reason is my background. I graduated with a journalism degree in 2000 from the University of Maine. Very proud of that. I've been writing since I was in junior high. It's just something I did. And back then, which is not that long ago, but also with the way that technology has exploded, it feels like a billion years ago. How you're taught was you're not supposed to be friends with your subjects, and you don't inject personal opinion into articles. And sports media was always my thing. And when you went to press conferences, your job isn't to be on the team. Your job is to cover the team. And that was it. Now, I was in college, and it made it tough because I was covering all these different sports. And these are people that were my peers, like my classmates. And so there's this weird kind of feeling you have, like, how hard do I want to go in on someone? And you kind of walk that line, and you be fair. And I remember the women's basketball coach, Joanne Palumbo-McCauley, lit into me in an interview with a different publication, which I was being too negative or something like that. And to this day, I think it was complete bullshit that she said that. And she basically was saying how the school paper should be more positive and all that. And I will stand by my coverage back then in 1996 through 2000. I'll stand up to it right now and say it was admirable. It was great. Who's going to know, right? But no, I was fair. And that was the thing. I never had an axe to grind or anything like that. And so that's how you were taught, is just tell the truth and so on. Now, what has happened over time is that columnists and traditional media members used to be a separate thing. And just the way everything is kind of contracted, that's not the case anymore. And that's unfortunate. Cost centers, journalism or news being a cost center now and a revenue generator, that has changed things as well. And now, like, the journalism classes and how I learned, I might as well have been learning like Greek, because now, and I've talked about it here before, today's journalists would have to be learning how to do Photoshop, social media, how to cut clips, you know, do images, learn how to get pull quotes for headlines, you know, it's just, instead of the actual substance of something itself. And also people that I follow for other sports, it's this merging of news and opinion. Dave Meltzer, I mean, he does a weekly newsletter and reports on news and so on, but he also gives reviews of matches. He's been doing that for decades. And so that's kind of this hybrid as well. So the blowback was, you know, it's this weird thing now of standards used to exist in industries for a reason, and now it doesn't seem to matter. Standards just, they don't matter. If people are like, well, I don't like how that makes me feel, so we should just abolish it, and that's the bottom line, without respecting the fact that standards existed in these industries for decades and decades and decades, and it's okay if those things happen. Now, have things changed? Yes, they certainly have. I still don't love in any interview saying, this happens a lot in wrestling, people. I saw a lot of comments about this, like, welcome to pro wrestling news conferences. But it is starting to spread in MMA, Luke mentioned as well. It's starting to spread to other sports, and it's a virus, and it's going to take over everything, where the expectation is, leave our guys alone. We're all on the same team. And when you have media doing that, then all of a sudden, truth tends to get evaporated and put to the side. Now, people with access to grind and so on, that's a different thing. But for the most part, the media should be, those reporting on news should be trying to keep things separate and not putting their own opinion in articles and so on, and especially not giving a coach a pep talk at a press conference. Now, past guest Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful, who I like a lot. Again, he's been a guest here before. He is someone that I respect a lot for what he's done and what Fightful has built up and so on. I saw, actually took a shot at us in one of their, they did a price increase and took a shot at us and at our prices. I did see that, but that's okay. That's okay. But he mentioned, what did he put on? He did a sports media rant. You can read the whole thing. And yeah, it's he just is not bothered by it. And he made these comments. I'm just going to just read this whole thing right now. We got a couple minutes, right? Sports media rant. There's a lot of traditional media and their feelings over Lynn Jones Turpin, providing some positive words to Jacksonville Jaguars head coach Liam Cohen. Media is expanding. That's why journalism majors changed to multimedia journalism. Then a bunch of those changed to convergent media. That's true. It's okay to have a traditional view, especially when there's less of that than ever. I agree. I avoid calling myself a journalist because the general public has taken a totally incorrect view of it being some self-appointed title of righteousness as opposed to a job title, and I really don't care about the job title. But finger-wagging a 30-year journalism veteran for spending 20 seconds providing positive affirmation, that's just looking for something to be bothered by. I can't imagine actually be bothered by that. I 100% disagree on that. Journalists are losing out on jobs and general access to former athletes, content creators, and like, because media has expanded. Yes, it has. I would say social media has basically destroyed current day media in ways that I think are irreparable. Actually, Sean has actually talked about that before on Twitter, and I agree with what he said. And it, with any news site, especially one that provides stuff behind a paywall, that in Fightful's experiences, we get this experience with this every Friday, is that you put something up and immediately Twitter, just in their specific accounts, that will take everything before your subscribers will actually get a chance to read it. everything is like cut up, parsed, and out there. And it sucks. And there's nothing any of us can do about it unless we start suing Twitter accounts, which it sounds as impossible as you might sound. I don't think we've looked into it, but this is just kind of the way it is. And it makes it really difficult to draw revenue, to pay people, and so on, because I can see a lot of fans and people saying, why would I, and this has happened in wrestling, this happens in all types of other outlets as well, why would I pay for something if I can just get on Twitter about 5 seconds later? So media has expanded. I would say social media has expanded, actually has helped kind of destroy our industry and the media industry at large, which I think Sean's agreed with as well, because I've seen that before. He says, also, these are media press conferences, not waterboarding sessions. She doesn't have to be the fifth person to ask what happened on the play or how big was that play. NFL provides constant access to coaches and players to a degree of which my line of work couldn't imagine. Accurate. There's plenty of chances. Yes, I would say that not everyone goes to these same press conferences. And they're media press conferences, yes, but it doesn't mean that there's a wide range of media press conference versus a waterboarding session. I would say that. And if you're to me a professional, which this lady is, you should know kind of the difference between interjecting personal opinion. What does that do? What does that statement do? That could be done in private. That could be done via an email. That could be done anyway. But out in the public, what's the point of that, right? Other than to kind of like, I'll say, pat yourself on the back for saying it. And a lot of people will do that. They'll do, I'm not saying she did, but a lot of people want kind of public PR points with fans and things like that. I'm on your team and so on. And I don't really care for that. There's also a lot of, it's not her job to blank comments. You don't know what her job is or editor's conversation with her or assignments or goals. Uniform media is boring as hell. I don't think an editor said, I want you to go give praise to the team. I'm sure, I don't know what her assignment was. I don't know to the extent that assignments exist at this point. I think it's kind of coordinated with however different media members for the paper or the media outlet. Uniform media is boring as hell. That's just kind of one of those like, well, we should have no standards. That's how I take that. And uniform, I think, means professional and actually trying to adhere to a standard. That's what I think. Sean, in this case, doesn't agree with it. I think in other ways he does, but what have you. Adapt or keep your narrow view left of what media is and get left behind. I would disagree with that statement quite a bit. Also under this, he said, also same for fans who only want cheerleaders instead of reporters. Well, then what's the difference? And that's the thing, is there is, once you kind of let the dam break, which it is leaking all over the place, how do you expect people to tell the difference? I don't think so. I think that's pretty impossible and so on. But that was my thoughts on that. And I'm sure other people wrote something about this as well. Sean kind of quoted a couple of people kind of putting him over. I don't really love that, but that's whatever. Someone saying he's a peak character in media. Okay. That's fine. I like Sean a lot and respect to what he's done, and reasonable people can disagree. And I don't agree with some of those things there. It sucks that we're kind of in this spot, but you know, people move on, and I'm sure we're going to see more of this now in terms of this kind of the rah-rah stuff, and you get what you ask for. That's all I'm going to say. You get what you ask for. It also is interesting, I find, while I'm ranting on this, and again, I'm going a little overtime here, but I feel like it. It's funny when wrestlers complain about media coverage and how the sport is covered, the industry, I guess, is covered. And some of these people, I'm sure, follow pro sports teams and love to know what's going on with the team and the inside scoops and all those type of things. Why isn't it the same thing, right? I always thought that was kind of hypocritical. If a wrestler says, well, why do people care about dirt sheet stuff and all these things? Well, why does anyone care about anything? Why do sports fans care about inner workings of teams and what's going on and drama and all these things, right? The same thing. I just want to kind of throw that out there. Something to think about. Did you see that Corey Graves and I are best friends? I wouldn't say that. But somebody didn't mention when we're talking about the Morning Combat launch during the show earlier, is that Chuck Mendenhall, who was a guest in the first few episodes of this very show, he was talking to Luke about he and Corey Graves, who he called Matt, who was apparently a friend of his, and I think Chuck still lives in Connecticut, which would make sense. I assume Corey Graves lived in Connecticut with WWE being there. So I think he said he lived down the street from him. But anyway, Chuck Mendenhall and Corey Graves are friends. And at one point, before the TKO merger or right after it or something along those lines, they were talking about doing an MMA podcast years ago. And I posted that in a retweet, and I tagged Corey in it, wondering if he might comment or take notice. And he replied back. He said, confirmed. Did it publicly, not a DM. But he said that was confirmed. I thought a great name for it. Someone came up with Dream Ninja 77 on X. The Man with the Hat and the Man with the Tats podcast win. I agree. I think it'd be fun. One of those fun kind of what-if moments, right? What-ifs are often sometimes better than the actual reality and so on. So that's about that. Okay. I've talked about a lot of things. And I am, what is this I'm seeing right now? I was just talking about other journalists. It's funny. I'm looking. I just happen to have my Twitter up. And I'm a Red Sox fan, and boy, people are complaining about the planning around the Red Sox and not signing Alex Bregman. Someone says it's journalism and reporting. I don't doubt those reports. No, actually, this isn't going to mean anything to you. Listening to this, boy, everyone loves to complain about reports and how things are being, I don't know. I give up, but I'm not giving up on you, at least not today. You've been in a great audience. I can't see you, but you've been great. I appreciate the time you spend with me. Or any of the fine hosts here at WrestlingObserver.com. I appreciate the hour that Luke spent with me. I hope you do as well. Please tag him on social. I don't know if you'll see it, but I would appreciate it. Any guests that I have, that would be great. Just said, you know, like the interview. Thanks for doing anything like that. Look, we're trying to build this thing up, and as we have, and that would be helpful. I'm stammering, so I'm going to get out of here. Big thanks to you. Thanks to everyone for listening. Until next time, which will be next week, insert catchphrase here.